started. Ready, Carla?
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the April 21st meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Would you please read the two items, and then I'll talk about how the council is going to proceed tonight.
Item 388, direct the director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation to initiate a 120-day private-for-hire transportation innovation pilot program, and 389, revise private-for-hire transportation regulations pertaining to taxi companies and transportation network service operators.
Thank you. So let me set the context for our deliberations tonight and for folks that want to speak. First of all, the City of Portland's been grappling with the question of how do we deal with this new phenomenon of transportation network companies for about 6 months. Back in December, we were confronted with one or more of those companies beginning operations here with essentially no regulation. We obtained an agreement with Uber Technologies to wait some months before attempting that and to begin negotiating with us and other parties to this discussion, including other transportation network companies, about whether we could regulate that new industry in some way that would make sense. And that's what's before us now, a proposal to do that. Again, let me set some context. There are hundreds of cities around the country and around the world where this new technology has arrived and simply gone unregulated. There are a few places in the world that have said, no, we don't want this new technology at all, and have managed, at least for a short time, in some cases, to keep it at bay. Our approach has been to, again, see if there's a thoughtful, responsible way that we could actually regulate this new thing in a new way, as opposed to the old phenomenon of taxi companies that we've been regulating for a really long time. And in fact, Portland is unique in the world to be in the position that we're in right now of getting to a regulatory proposal that the new industry is willing to go along with, that not everyone likes, and that tries to manage change in a really old industry, that is the regulated taxi cab industry. This is not an issue that any of us, frankly, saw coming very long ago, but that we've tried to grapple with, again, in a thoughtful way. We're in a region of 2.2 million people, actually 2,226,009 people. 610,000 of those people live in the City of Portland, less than a third. There are 25 cities that surround us in which Uber and Lyft and these other companies operate with no regulation whatsoever. Let me say that again. We are one of 26 cities in the Portland metropolitan area. And we are going to try to do this through regulation. The other cities have simply surrendered, and I think that was the wrong approach. So we're trying, again, to do this in a thoughtful way. And I appreciate the work of Commissioner Novick and his staff of the Transportation Bureau and of the task force that they convened to bring this issue to us. Before I turn it over to Commissioner Novick for some other opening comments, let me talk a little bit about our process here tonight. In addition to thinking about this issue and having a task force working on it for some months, the Portland City Council has had so far 9 hours of deliberation on this subject. There are not very many subjects that we spend that much time on, but this is important, so we have. But we've heard from a lot of people. And so tonight we're going to get to a point where the council can act on the resolution in front of us and on the ordinance in front of us because we have been working on this issue for a while and we have heard from a lot of people. We want to hear from you as well, and so we're going to set some time limits that try to ensure that by the time we get to the point of taking action at 8 p.m., we've heard from most of you. So I'm going to ask that organizations who have a spokesperson be allowed to take 3 minutes to testify, and individuals take 1 minute, and that's so your fellow citizens will have a chance to speak. So some other rules of decorum in this chamber that we please ask you to observe. One is that if you agree with your fellow citizen who's testifying, feel free to give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand or otherwise make some friendly gesture of support. If you feel like you have to do the opposite, give them a thumbs down. But we ask that you not make vocal demonstrations in this chamber in favor or against your fellow citizens' thoughts so that they have a chance to express them. And I think we all appreciate that chance to have our say, and that's what we're trying to make sure we're about here. If you're a lobbyist representing an organization under our city code, you know this, you're required to disclose that, please do. So those are some very basic and I hope understandable rules for how we'll proceed tonight. And with that, I want to ask Commissioner Novick to otherwise set the stage and call up some staff to present what's in front of us.
Thank you, Mayor. I've been asked about this issue of taxis and TNCs numerous times over the past year. And what I've said from the beginning is that although I'm committed to the rule of law and nobody's going to be allowed to come in and just start making up their own laws, I thought that it was past time to take another look at the regulations, the rather unusual regulations governing this industry. We do not normally limit the number of participants in any given market. We don't limit the number of restaurants. We don't limit the number of gas stations. We limit the number of taxis. We don't normally regulate prices. We don't normally regulate the price. We don't regulate the price of groceries or of gasoline or of restaurant meals. So what we are proposing to do in this pilot is for 120 days let the normal free market principles that apply in the rest of the economy apply to this industry and not limit the number of participants and not regulate prices. We've dealt with the regulated system for a number of years. We think that it's worth seeing what an unregulated system on those two areas looks like for the next 4 months. Now, those aren't the only issues, however. And we're willing to have more competition, but it needs to be fair competition. And that's why in this pilot proposal, we're requiring that everybody get background checks, all vehicles are subject to inspection, that all of the companies, including the TNCs, have to provide 24/7 service, and that none of them can reject a ride on the basis that it's too long or too short. Now, there were a couple of issues that we were particularly concerned about a few months ago. One was that some of the TNCs were resisting the idea that anything other than a driver's personal insurance should have to cover what's been referred to as period one, when the app is on, but before an request for a ride has been accepted. And we insisted that period one is different from somebody just normally driving around with no commercial intent. So this proposal says that during that period one, there will have to be insurance significantly greater than is normally required of a typical personal driver. Instead of an insurance mandate of $25,000 per person for bodily injury and property damage and $50,000 per crash, for period one, it's going to be $50,000 per person and $100,000 per crash. Another thing we are deeply concerned about is service for people with disabilities. And for the taxi cabs, we've had this rule that 20% of the fleet has to be wheelchair accessible. These transportation network companies don't really have fleets in the same sense, so that requirement didn't really seem to work. What we ultimately decided was, why not have a service standard and simply say that if you are making people who need wheelchair accessible service wait for an hour and everybody else waits for 10 minutes, you are not giving sufficient service and you are in violation. So that's what we're proposing today. So those were, I thought, the points we were most worried about a few months ago, which we've now addressed. And at this point, I'd like to call up Brian Hockaday of my staff and Michael Jacobs and Ken Peabod and Ken McGarrett of the City Attorney's Office to talk about the specific proposal we're addressing today.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Brian Hockaday, Policy Advisor for Commissioner Novick. I'm joined by Kim McGare from the City Attorney's Office and Michael Jacobs from PBOT. And what we would like to do for you this evening is walk you through the high-level tenets of the Private for Hire Innovation Pilot Program, which is based largely on the task force's recommendations, which were presented to Council a couple weeks ago. And certainly incorporates the great deal of public input that we have received as well as council direction. Without any further ado, I will go ahead and start going over the details of the actual pilot program. And we will start with the safety and service principles. TNCs will be required to certify compliance with city requirements for each vehicle and driver certified as permitted to operate for a transportation network company. These are all subject to city auditing and regular enforcement actions performed by PBOT staff. Taxi companies will also be able to utilize the same process of certifying that their drivers and their vehicles do meet all city requirements. All companies will be, as Commissioner Novick stated, all companies will be required to provide citywide 24-hour service, and they must provide reasonably prompt service to everyone, including people with disabilities. TNC operators will be prohibited from accepting street hails and from waiting in designated taxi zones. For the operating requirements and prohibitions, no vehicles over 10 years old will be allowed to operate as either a TNC or a taxi vehicle. All vehicles must pass standardized vehicle safety tests performed by either a master mechanic certified by the National Institute for Automotive Safety Excellence or by an ASC Blue Seal recognized shop. And all vehicles must be equipped with hands-free accessories for mobile devices, first aid kits, and fire extinguishers. Additionally, TNC vehicles must display what is called trade dress or a company logo, and all taxi vehicles must be painted in keeping with company aesthetics and be equipped with a top light and taxi meter. Proof of insurance and a copy of a driver's business license must be carried in vehicles. Secure digital records with contact information from drivers and riders must be maintained by transportation network companies. These records will provide a verifiable way to identify both drivers and riders. Taxi companies must also maintain secure digital records of drivers and riders or equip vehicles with digital security cameras. In addition, both transportation network companies and taxi companies must provide these records to police upon request within 24 hours of that request. For background checks and driver requirements, each TNC will be required to conduct a national criminal and driving background check and may do so through a third-party provider accredited by the National Association of Professional Background Screeners. Taxi companies may also perform background check screenings. Drivers will not be certified as a permanent driver if some of the following exist. The applicant has a felony conviction of any kind in the 10 years preceding the submission of the application, or if the applicant has ever been convicted of any felony involving physical harm or attempted physical harm to a person, regardless of when the conviction occurred. DMV records will also be checked to ensure that drivers have a safe driving record in the past 10 years. All drivers working as independent contractors must comply with the provisions of the business license law, including they must register for a business license number. And no driver, whether they're a TNC or a taxi driver, is allowed to drive after engaging in more than 14 hours of any commercial activity in any given 24-hour period. Driver requirements include the following. A TNC driver can only accept rides booked through a TNC digital platform and cannot solicit or accept street hails or stop in a city-approved taxi zone. Drivers will carry proof of insurance and a copy of their business license as required. All permitted companies must employ at all times a zero-tolerance policy for intoxicant use for all drivers. Drivers must utilize hands-free accessories for mobile devices. I'd like to have Michael Jacobs from PBOT explain the driver testing and training.
So training and testing is required for all drivers.
Michael, please state your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Michael Jacobs with Bureau of Transportation. Again, training and testing is required for all drivers. Permitted companies will be allowed to administer the training and the testing, and their programs must be approved by the city and will include the following. Testing will include relevant city code and administrative rules, Portland area attractions, and map reading. And there will also be driver safety training and customer service training requirements.
Will that be required before they get their permit?
The training and the testing will be required within 4 months of receiving their permit or their certification.
So not during the pilot period?
The pilot period is 4 months long, 120 days, so it would be required during the pilot period.
I don't understand those two statements. You said they wouldn't be required until 4 months.
They have to be completed within 4 months of the driver receiving their permit or certification.
And is there a penalty? Are we going to check at the end of the 4 months to see, to make sure that all of the drivers that have been driving have, in fact, completed that training?
Yes, that will be part of our auditing procedures.
I'm Ken McGarrett from the City Attorney's Office, and I've been tasked with going over the insurance principles. First, both TNCs and taxi company permit holders must secure and maintain commercial general liability insurance reflecting limits of not less than $1 million per occurrence and $2 million in the aggregate for covered claims arising out of the course of the permit holder's work. In addition, the permitted TNCs and taxi companies will be required to provide insurance policies naming the City of Portland as an additional insured and to provide the city with at least 30 days notice prior to a policy being canceled, a reduction in coverage, or an expiration of the policy. The insurance coverage that we will be named an additional insured on is all commercial insurance provided by the companies, including commercial auto liability, commercial general liability, workers' compensation, and employers' liability insurance to the state, to the extent the state requires that. Now moving on to the commercial auto policies. Taxi cab companies at the moment have a commercial auto policy with limits of not less than $500,000 per occurrence for claims arising out of, but not limited to, bodily injury and property damage incurred from their commercial activity as a taxi. Permitted TNCs will provide primary coverage throughout the entire three phases that we've talked about over the last few weeks. In period one, which, as Commissioner Novick noted, which is the period when the app is on but no match has been made, the minimum liability limits will be $50,000 per person for death and injury, $100,000 per incident for death and injury, and $25,000 for property damage. For periods two and three, those minimum liability limits, that is, period two is the match is made and the driver is en route to pick up the passenger. Period three, again, is the passenger is in the vehicle until the passenger safely exits the vehicle. Primary insurance with minimum liability limits of $1 million in combined single limit coverage for death, personal injury, and property damage, and $1 million combined single limit underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage.
Can I ask a question on that? If the legislature in the next few months changes the minimums that would apply to a TNC, will the language in our code say this is our minimum subject to whatever Oregon law provides?
Certainly, Commissioner, Oregon law would set the requirements for a transportation network company, and if the state legislature chooses to go that direction, we would simply adopt that as our rule. As of now, they haven't done anything, and the bill, the proposal that we have put in the guiding principles is essentially a national model bill that is going throughout the country for TNC coverage.
What's the minimum again that California adopted? period one.
It's $50,000, $100,000, and $30,000 in property damage with a $200,000 excess liability policy as well, but that doesn't go into effect until July 1st of 2015.
And just a technical question, when you come in to get your permit, do you have to have proof of insurance at that point?
Yes.
So you have to have the policy and you have to show that you've got this coverage on the vehicle at the time the permit issues?
Correct. The company will be certifying that with regards to their drivers.
So the the company will certify it.
Yes, that the driver is insured under the company TNC policy covering all three periods as primary.
And the way the code is written, if there's a violation of the minimum standards, you have the option of going against the TNC and the driver?
Correct.
Both.
Yes. I mean, the company is certifying that they are an insured driver and the vehicle is insured under the company policy.
So you can hold the company accountable if it turns out they're in fact is not the requisite insurance, and you also can go after the driver.
Operator. Correct. What we would do is immediately, if that were the case, and I'm just theorizing, revoke the permit of or revoke the certification for that particular driver and notify the company that he is no longer authorized to operate in the city of Portland.
And I just so you're on that point, because this is very helpful for me, Brian, the civil penalty table that's attached to the ordinance, the 16.40.540, I guess that's the old language applicable to taxis, says that in addition to civil penalty and the suspension and revocation provisions of blah, 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 any second offense is grounds for suspension of the permit, and any third or subsequent offense is grounds for revocation or permit. Is there any reason why we don't recycle that language in the language around TNCs and the separate penalty table that we've created, so it has the parallel language, or is that your intent?
Yeah, we intend to explain all of our enforcement options to you a bit later, but we can actually jump ahead to that now if that'd be helpful.
I guess the only question I would have for now is, since you have that explicit language currently in the code that says the options you have, including a second offense, it will be your intent to have the same language applied to the TNC civil penalty table?
Yes.
Moving on, I think I've covered periods 2 and 3, and so that kind of wraps up the insurance piece. I would like to say that the TNCs provide insurance through what's called a surplus lines insurer. Because this is a new market in the state, there are no insurers that are currently offering such products and have underwritten products in the state of Oregon. But a surplus lines insurer has been allowed to offer the TNC insurance in the state, and there are brokers in the state that have provided it or are providing it. So there is insurance available at primary levels for all three periods during which a TNC will be operating.
Great. Equity and inclusion. TNCs and taxi companies will implement service performance measures to provide timely and equitable citywide service to all persons, including persons with disabilities. This is a point that Commissioner Novick mentioned in his opening remarks. We would like to transition the industry from a fleet requirement to a service performance measure to really ensure that everyone is receiving equitable, prompt service for all requests. All companies will be required to provide an option for riders to request wheelchair-accessible vehicle service. Service animals must be reasonably accommodated, and both TNCs and taxi companies will be prohibited from applying additional fare charges for wheelchair-accessible vehicles. At least as we transition the industry from a fleet requirement, the taxi companies must maintain at least 10% of their fleet as wheelchair-accessible, and the taxi companies must implement equitable service performance measures. The TNCs will implement service performance measures, tracking the differential between the wait times for wheelchair-accessible vehicles and non-wheelchair accessible vehicles. Excuse me. For the TNCs, for the first 30 days, they must provide reasonably prompt service, and they will be required to collect and submit data to the city. The following 30 days, data will be collected. Reasonably prompt service must be required or is required with no more than a 30-minute differential in the wait times. The following 30 days, again, that differential goes to 20 minutes or what the previous 30 days worth of data supports.
So, Brian, just to hold on that for a second. When it says no more than and lists a number of minutes, the intent is that if based on the data gathered to date, it seems reasonable to apply a higher standard, we would apply a higher standard.
Certainly. Thank you for clarifying.
So, Brian, and this question of not being able to charge a disabled passenger a different rate than an able-bodied passenger at that particular time. That would mean no additional charge. So it can't be a separate charge for a separate app. It can't be an add-on. It can't be any charge. They have to demonstrate that if someone in a wheelchair seeks a cab service and an able-bodied person, same time, same location, it's the identical pricing. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And no indirect or backdoor fees to compensate, no annual fee to be part of a service, no tag on, nothing.
No additional surcharge for a wheelchair-accessible vehicle service.
And so is the one complication we may have here that if we're not going to regulate price with either party, it's just going to be a little harder to figure out what the comparator is?
We fully intend to regularly audit and perform enforcement actions. So the city staff will be looking at this very closely. But an unregulated fare really has to do with lifting the cap, the ceiling on the fare rates, so that anytime if companies would like to use dynamic pricing when there's high demand and low supply, fare rates increase, but they increase evenly for all service requests, both wheelchair and non-wheelchair requests.
So, for example, if we found out that one of the TNCs was between the hours of 4 and 6 charging $5 a mile for non-wheelchair vehicles and $10 a mile for wheelchair vehicles, that would be a violation.
Right. And one of the very exciting opportunities about this pilot is the opportunity for the city to collect data in practically real time from TNCs and taxis. We will be asking for data to be provided to the city on a routine monthly basis. We intend to regularly update council during the pilot program. Both TNCs and taxis will be required to enter into a data sharing agreement with the city to provide aggregate and anonymized data, which includes the following: wait times, type of ride requested. Specifically, we're looking at wheelchair requests and non-wheelchair requests, trip origin zip code, trip destination zip code, and identification of requests that go unfilled.
Brian, the text you gave us in the supporting documents says each TNC will enter into an agreement. Is it your intention to ensure compliance with this by making this a condition of receiving the initial permit?
Yes, exactly. They have to enter into a data sharing agreement with us in order for their permits to be approved.
At the front end?
Correct.
Okay.
In addition to the data reporting, both taxis and TNCs will be required to report the following: number of collisions, including the type of collision, report on the number and type of crimes against drivers, and report the total number of passenger complaints. Fare rates, as we just mentioned, fare rates charged to passengers must be transparent and will not be capped except for times of emergency. All fare rates must be made clear and transparent to passengers before a passenger accepts a ride. And the PBOT director will limit or prohibit surge pricing during states of emergency as declared by the mayor.
With regard to company permit compliance, first of all, permits are required, and they are non-transferable. Once a company is permitted, there will be no cap on the number of vehicles. TNCs will be required to provide a certification to the Bureau that each vehicle and driver has met all conditions consistent with city requirements. Vehicles and drivers not meeting all such conditions will not be allowed to operate. Private-for-hire transportation operators are not allowed to operate at the Portland International Airport without specific permission or approval from the Port of Portland. Private-for-hire transportation permit holders will comply with insurance requirements and must file a certificate of liability with the administrator that evidences insurance coverage and terms that are in compliance with requirements.
Excuse me, I think there's updated information that the port has given permission for TNCs to operate at the airport.
But they must also have a City of Portland permit.
Right.
In order
but
to operate.
I want it to be clear for everybody that with a City of Portland permit, the port has given permission for TNCs to operate at the airport.
Thank you. All companies will be required to keep documentation of all certification requirements on file during the term of their permit and for 2 years after the expiration of their permit. And finally, with regard to compliance, no disclaimer of liability for negligence or other tortious conduct contained in any TNC user terms of service will have any force or effect in the City of Portland. Any tort claim against a TNC shall be governed by tort law in effect at the time of the claim.
Commissioner Novick, I may pose a question on that. In addition to this issue of disclaimer of liability, we talked last time about some of the restrictions that are placed on people's rights to pursue claims, the mandatory arbitration clause, and some other one-sided terms. My understanding from the city attorney is there are some potential legal barriers to us regulating that, and I want to do that in a thoughtful way. Is it your intent to take up that issue in phase two, for the purposes of an analysis of what we can regulate in that area?
I'd be happy to.
And the other question I had for you is, it's one thing to say that a disclaimer of liability shall not have any force or effect in the City of Portland. It'd be a lot cleaner if our partner in this enterprise deleted that term from the user agreement. Have any of the TNCs that you've communicated with been willing to consider deleting provisions which we think are either illegal or unenforceable?
Well, their position is that these are the terms that they put in all of their user agreements worldwide. It's a standard thing. So they're not willing to do that. They understand that they'll have no force or effect in the City of Portland.
And I can just add to that, their user agreements also state that applicable law in the locality or the state applies. So our statement is duplicative of what they have in their own user agreements.
So just for the record, I think the thing that a number of us expressed concern about last time isn't so much that at the end of the day this could get sorted out in a court proceeding. It's the effect of having anti-consumer language in a user agreement that a member of the public may read and may view as precluding exercising a basic right. And that may prevent someone from even testing that clause. And if it's in the user agreement, someone may very well think it's governing and may not have the time to check our code to see that we have a disagreement. So that's the broader problem with language that potentially discourages people from pursuing rights they may have.
I totally agree, Commissioner.
I understand, Commissioner. I think that it's on us to obtain the broadest possible education of the public on this issue, and we will aggressively seek to do that.
Going back to the data issue, how are we going to verify that the data we're given is the real data and nothing but the data?
As part of our enforcement actions, we will be also tracking wait times and different trip data also, so we can compare the information that the city is collecting itself with the information that is being provided by the taxi and the TNCs.
How are we going to be collecting that data?
We will be requesting service from both taxis and TNCs and comparing that to the data that they report to us in aggregate.
But we won't be able to know which drivers they have. We have to take their word for it that the list that they provide to us as their drivers is the only list of drivers that they have.
So for the driver list, we will receive on a regular basis updates of all of the drivers that are on the platform so that we can audit and certify that the drivers and the vehicles meet our requirements to operate here in Portland.
How will we know that we receive the list of all of the drivers on the platform?
For one thing, all drivers have to register, get a business license, so we can very quickly determine if the list from the TNCs is matching the business license database.
But if they give us the list of only the drivers who bothered to get the business license, how do we know that there are not other drivers who haven't done that?
So that we can certainly determine if a driver is operating on a platform without any certification or without any permits as we conduct enforcement actions, which we intend to do in full force throughout the pilot program.
How would we find out that?
Commissioner, the drivers that they're certifying are on their platform are being signed by an authorized officer of the corporation under penalty of perjury and subject to the penalties in the code. So if we have any knowledge that they're misstating or omitting drivers who are on their platform who they haven't sent to us as for certification to operate in the city of Portland, we have the option of revoking the permit from the company.
But how would we find out?
We would audit, and we would do the same enforcement actions we use now. How do we know whether a taxi cab operator driving around is permitted? We have to rely on the compliance officers in the field and audit capabilities.
We issue the permits now.
We do, but we don't normally police. We don't everyday police who's driving the vehicles, I guess is what I'm saying.
And actually, this would be a great time to provide council an overview of our enforcement options.
Well, we intend to enforce all the private for hire transportation rules and regulations. Similarly, there will be driver and company penalties, permit suspension and revocation pursuant to the terms in the code. The code has criminal charges for certain violations of driving without a permit or driving without a certification. As well as we are adding civil forfeiture to strengthen our legal position with regard to towing vehicles that are driving without certifications or permits. And that's part of the code changes that are part of the ordinance.
Is that it?
Yes.
So Brian, and you may have addressed this last time, but we've had a lot of hearings, so I think best to just make sure we got it right. So we're going to do a 120-day, the proposal is to do a 120-day pilot. And during that period, we may learn that that it's not going very well. And there may come a point where we think it's actually a calamity. At what point does it come back to council for further action?
So we plan to submit about every 30 days a report to council, and of course we'll make that report publicly available, which will include the data that we're collecting from the taxi and TNCs. And then we will also plan to schedule time on the council agenda to actually, at the midpoint of the pilot program, come and present the midpoint findings. And if at any point throughout the pilot program we determine that things are not working well at all, we have the opportunity to adjust the pilot program.
Does the 120-day period require any council action to be renewed?
No, it does not.
We were only contemplating a 120-day period. I think if you're asking whether the city or Director Treat extends it beyond the 120 days, we would come back to you with another resolution directing her to do that. But I believe, and Brian can correct me if I'm wrong, it's the goal is to have the task force continue working on a complete overhaul of Chapter 16.40 to add whatever necessary changes are to the code to address all private for hire regulations.
So could you play out for me the different scenarios that could occur after 120 days elapses? So because we're calling this a pilot project, so it doesn't have indefinite duration. Something happens the end of 120 days. Could you just walk us through what those options might be?
Yeah, so throughout the course of the pilot program, as Ken mentioned, the task force will continue to meet. They will be reviewing all of the data that's being collected from the taxi and the TNC companies. They will continue to seek public input on regulations for all modes of private for hire transportation. They will continue to draft recommendations, which will ultimately be submitted to council for consideration. And council will have the opportunity to get regular updates from the task force and from the private for hire market here in Portland. And then in about July, so while they're about 30 days still on the clock for the pilot program, we intend to ask the task force to present their final recommendations to council, again, while there's about 30 days on the clock, so that council can evaluate the task force's recommendations and then ultimately be prepared to implement final regulations in city code at the end of the 120-day pilot program.
So that's enormously helpful, the way you just said that. And the council would have the full menu of options at that point: discontinue the program, continue a pilot, create a modified or new set of rules governing the industry going forward, or something else. But that would be, it would require some council action prior to the end of the 120 days for this to continue.
Correct.
So, first of all, I guess start with the basics. What does it mean to certify? A TNC will certify. What does that mean?
So the transportation network company, all drivers and vehicles associated with the transportation network company must apply to operate for that company directly through the company's platform. The company, contingent upon a permit from the City of Portland, is certifying that all of their affiliated vehicles and drivers meet the requirements that the city establishes. The city will routinely audit the drivers and the vehicles and conduct enforcement actions both on the drivers' vehicles and the companies to ensure that all three entities are in complete compliance.
So walk me through if tomorrow I want to go to work, me and my car, want to go to work for Uber or Lyft, assuming we're in this trial period. What is it that I have to do as that potential driver?
Before you as a driver actually get onto a TNC platform, the TNC will actually need to apply for a City of Portland permit. So contingent upon council's approval of the pilot program, the PBOT director will be directed to enter into the administrative rules the tenants of the actual pilot. Permits applications will be made available shortly thereafter. As the companies apply for the permits, city staff will review those permits, make a recommendation to the Commissioner Novick, who will approve or deny the permits contingent on the meeting of all of the city requirements. So within a matter of days, you as a driver would be able to operate as a certified driver.
But you would have, the driver has to acquire a city business license.
Absolutely, yeah. Meet all requirements.
And what about the safety inspection, the vehicle safety inspection?
All the vehicles, all the drivers, all the vehicles have to be inspected. All the drivers have to go through and pass background checks. They have to meet all the requirements before operating in the City of Portland with a permit.
And is there a frequency to background checks? Is it done every year?
Background checks are required to be conducted annually.
Right now, the pilot program is only for 120 days, so we haven't specified that they have to be done annually, but that is the goal.
Okay. And so on the issue of background checks, I mean, right now, I guess Portland Police does background checks for potential taxicab drivers, and so we're moving away from that for taxicabs as well as for TNCs. We're moving to third-party certified background check.
So this isn't actually a change in city code. Current code allows for background checks to be performed by a city-approved third-party vendor or run through the state law enforcement database system,
yeah.
LED system. We are encouraging taxi and TNC companies to utilize the third-party vendors. They can perform more timely and ensure a national checks are being performed. The LED system is only checking for criminal histories in the state of in Oregon. We do get notification if there is an out-of-state conviction, at which point drivers have to be called back in to get fingerprinted and FBI checks are run. So one of the benefits of third-party vendors is they can, upon consent of the applicant, do that national search. Looking for all of the disqualifying factors that are laid forth in city code.
So we're leveling the field, though, either taxis.
Correct.
Or
all
TNCs.
Taxis and TNCs will be able to utilize third-party vendors that are approved by the city.
Okay. And then at what point is it verified that there is a hands-free device installed in taxi or TNC vehicle?
So that's certainly something that the TNCs and the taxis must certify, and then as we conduct audits and enforcement actions, that's certainly one of the things that we will be looking for specifically.
So as part of the vehicle inspection, part of the TNC or taxi cab, certifying a vehicle is eligible for service, it must have a hands-free device mounted.
Right. That's not actually a vehicle requirement per se. That's a requirement that the driver whenever a driver is utilizing a mobile device, they must have a hands-free device. So transportation network companies are certifying that every driver is actually utilizing a hands-free accessory for their mobile device. We will be auditing and checking that during enforcement actions.
So maybe it's just my own ignorance on what a hands-free device actually is. I guess I'm picturing something mounted on the dashboard.
Right.
Not something drivers holding in one hand with, earphones in the other.
Right. They're typically mounted to the windshield or to the dashboard.
So that's what we're talking about.
Correct.
And why can't that be verified at the vehicle inspection point?
We're looking for key actual vehicle components. So we didn't include that on the vehicle inspection checklist. We put that on the responsibility of the individual driver and the companies themselves to ensure that all drivers who are utilizing the mobile devices have that hands-free accessory.
But doesn't that leave us in the position of, we have to catch you? Whereas if we require it up front as part of the vehicle inspection, you've got to have it. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Well, there are several conduct standards required for drivers. We included that as one of the standards of conduct for all drivers.
But it's still incumbent upon us catching you. And I guess I have the same question for proof of business license. It's the same thing. I mean, we have to, as opposed to saying TNC driver, show your business license to the company before they grant you permission to drive for them. I'm also saying that, as part of the vehicle inspection, that you have proof of the hands-free device.
Well, certainly for the business license, as independent contractors, those drivers must register for a business license, and we wanted to retain that as an enforcement action for the City of Portland so that we are ensuring that those independent contractors maintain that status in terms of their relationship with a company and that the city is performing those sorts of enforcement actions for drivers, for the vehicles, and against the companies.
And does the driver have to provide that business license to the either the TNC or the taxi cab?
No, they need to provide that to the City of Portland, again, as independent contractors. That relationship is really between the driver and then the City of Portland.
So, again, that's kind of a post-fact. I mean, that's if you catch us without our business license, then you can cite us.
Commissioner, we're going to be getting a list of the drivers, and if there's no business license number attached to the list that the TNC certified to us, we will have the contact information of the individual drivers and be able to enforce against them directly. We know who they are. We have contact information for them.
You're only going to be getting the list of the ones with the licenses. You won't get the list of the ones that don't have the business license.
We're going to get
a list.
Do you want to answer that?
No, go ahead.
We're going to get a list of everybody that has been certified by the company as available to operate on their platform. If they don't have a business license next to their name, they're not allowed to operate in the City of Portland. We'll have contact information to track them down and make them get the business license. It takes, what I understand, 5 minutes online.
Now you're confusing me, and it's beginning.
I hope not.
Well, maybe it's just me, but are we allowing a TNC to give access to the platform by a driver that doesn't have a business license fee?
No.
A business license number?
No.
So why would a TNC give us a list of drivers that don't have business licenses?
They want to make sure, and they're trying to ensure that all of their drivers get the business license number up front. But presumably they won't.
But assuming they did, the first thing you would do is say to the TNC, don't allow this person to have access to your platform.
Correct.
And if you do, we're going to fine you for that because this person doesn't meet the certification.
All the requirements. Correct.
This, by the way, is not an idle thing because 95% of the folks who are on the platforms of companies that are in short-term rentals are not licensed with the City of Portland, out of compliance with our rules. We don't have a particularly effective way of enforcing against the operator and saying you shall not give them access if they're not inspected or licensed. So this is something the council cares deeply about, and you're saying that under this agreement, the TNCs have agreed not to allow access to any driver that doesn't have a business license?
Commissioner, they're not allowed. The drivers will not be allowed to operate in the City of Portland. If that means that we have to fine the company to get them off the platform, then that's what we'll do. But we, the difference here between the I don't want to say the name of the company, but the short-term rental issue and this is we have the names of the drivers and their contact information to get them to come into compliance directly.
But assuming we become aware that a driver doesn't have a business license number, have the TNCs agreed to prevent that driver from having access to their platform until they have fixed that problem?
I don't know that they have agreed to do that, but that is our intent, is to have that person not be on the platform or subject the company to civil penalty, as well as the driver. Again, I want to reiterate that we will know who the driver is, and we'll have the contact information so we can get the business license from the driver pretty quickly and enforce against the driver.
So there can be a civil penalty against the company if, for whatever reason, the company chooses to ignore the fact this person doesn't have a business license.
Yes. Yes.
And what constitutes each offense under those circumstances? We determine they don't have a license, and every day we wake up and see them listed. They're operating. They get access to the platform. What constitutes a discrete offense?
Each time that they have access to the platform, I guess we would request from the company whether they've been logged on to the platform or whether they're allowed to log on to the platform. But again, it's our goal, and I think the TNC's goal is to do this all up front. So presumably we won't have this issue, and if we do, we'll be able to contact the driver immediately and get this taken care of.
The other distinction, of course, is that in short-term rentals, we can't tow away their house, but we can tow away their car.
Well, I guess let me just see if I'm missing something here, but someone decides to operate within this system, but they begin by assuming they're thinking they're just going to operate in Beaverton, but they start going into Portland. So once they cross the boundary and they're doing business in Portland, they have to get a business license. When are we going to find out that they either have or have not complied? And isn't the TNC in the best position to know whether that's occurred because they're assigning a ride within our boundaries, and therefore they know that an event has occurred which is of concern to us? Aren't they in the best position at that point to say, do you have a license or not?
If a driver is already on a platform, on a TNC platform, and they're picking up passengers in Beaverton, and then they want to start picking up passengers in the city of Portland, they will not be able to get onto that platform until a TNC certifies that the driver is in complete compliance with all the requirements that we establish. And as we are cross-checking the names of the drivers who are on the platform with the as we look for the business license, and as we're cross-checking that through the Revenue's business license database, we will be able to notify the driver and notify the TNC if the driver does not have a business license, and that driver must get the business license and will be removed from the platform if that driver is not in compliance.
We had heard last time from drivers who are currently driving in Beaverton and would like to be able to drive in Portland. But colleagues, I know that we have a lot of people who are going to testify, so I was wondering if we could get any amendments on the table. Commissioner Saltzman, it sounded like you were moving towards requiring a hands-free device as part of the vehicle inspection, along with the fire extinguishers and the first aid kit and such.
Well, I wasn't actually moving towards an amendment. I think it's something, an issue I want to track closely during this 120-day period if we go ahead with that.
If you were to propose, I would certainly support that, because it seems to me if we're going to be checking that they have a fire extinguisher, we should be able to be checked that they've got a hands-free device on their front.
Okay. I also consider amendments after we take testimony.
So, well, then we would have to take testimony on the
either way,
on
your,
the amendments.
Your choice.
Yeah. So I have an amendment that I'd like to put on the table. We don't necessarily have to vote on it right now, but I'd like to put it on the table for discussion so that people can testify, and then we wouldn't have to take additional testimony. I'm very concerned about the insurance for the transportation network company. There are two bills that are currently being considered by the House. I spoke with House Representative Susan McLean at about 4:30 today, and that's House Bill 2237 and House Bill 2995, both of which cover issues of private insurance. And the piece that I'm most, there's two pieces I'm concerned about. One is adequate insurance when the app is on, but there's no customer. For taxis, the minimum insurance now is $500,000. The proposal on the table is $50,000. What the state is considering is $75,000. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is that currently, if your private insurance company finds out that you're driving for Uber, they will cancel your private policy, which I think is putting Portlanders potentially at risk. And again, the House bills would fix that problem. So my amendments are that we not move forward with the pilot project. My amendment is that we would not move forward with the pilot program until the state of Oregon has commenced. So here's my amendment. Be it further resolved that the pilot program will not commence before the state of Oregon has completed rulemaking, ensuring that appropriate insurance coverage is available to all Oregon Transportation Network companies during all periods of vehicle operation.
Mayor, do we need a second to put it on the table?
We do need a second. Hey, folks, please.
So I'll second it so it's on the table.
Okay, it's
Thank
on the table,
sure.
And we can take testimony on that, too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, just two more quick questions. Who does the DMV record check?
So a third-party vendor can do that. Okay. Yeah.
And then I'm having trouble wrapping my arms around lifting the fares for the taxi cabs. So I'm just confused. Like, if right now they're all placarded, you know, it's $250 initially and $250 a mile or something like that. So if I'm hailing a cab in downtown Portland going to, I don't know, Southeast 122nd, how do I determine what the fare is? How does that work?
So a taxi company or driver would need to inform a passenger before a passenger gets into that vehicle of what the fare rate is, again, before the passenger is actually in that vehicle.
What the rate is or what the fare for the trip would be?
But both with the fare and the fare rate, they need to inform passengers before the passenger is in that vehicle.
We don't require cab companies to display that now.
We do have a cap on the maximum amount of fares.
I mean, do we require them to display it in the vehicle, which is
yes.
the case
yes.
in some cities? Okay.
So if there's new rates, new charges, that has to be
posted,
displayed.
Right.
Okay. And it's not really a driver-customer negotiation. It's really the company determining what its fare structure will be in this interim period.
Sure.
So does that display requirement for the cabs continue even if the rate regulation per se is lifted during the pilot project?
Yeah, and in fact, that requirement to display fares is in this pilot applied for taxis and TNCs. Both companies have to display that information to passengers before they're in the vehicle.
And so that deals with the question of getting into a car and having to have a separate negotiation. But if we deregulate it completely, those fares could change daily, hourly, whatever. What we're requiring is that it somehow be posted. So when you get into the car, you see them. But we're not requiring that they remain consistent.
Correct.
All right.
Other questions? I know we want to move to testimony. We also, whoops, maybe he's not still in the room. We also have the chairman of the task force here, so we may need to ask him questions later, but we might have additional questions for staff when we move to deliberation later. But
I do just have a question about that, what we were just discussing with taxis. How is somebody who's approaching a taxi cab line supposed to know how much each cab is going to be charging them?
The taxis would need to notify the passenger before the passenger's in the vehicle.
So the customer is supposed to go to each of the cabs in the line to ask how much the ride would be?
Sure.
Well, I would submit that currently, if you're going to buy gas, you have to go to each gas station in turn to find out what the price for gas is at that station.
Okay. Further questions? Hey, folks, please, we ask you just give her a thumbs up or a thumbs down if you agree with her, and same to me and same to anyone else in the room, but let's keep it civil and quiet enough to hear each other. Any other further questions? Thank you all very much. Obviously, stand by. Now, I believe we had both a sign-up sheet for organizations and for individuals. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
So how many do you have in each category?
I have 9 individual or 9 people representing organizations and I have 82 individuals signed up.
Okay. So my suggestion, if the council likes this, is we take the organizations first because it will only take a little more than half an hour, and then move to individuals just so that we hear from those who are representing groups of people. So unless there's an objection to that, let's take the organizations first in order.
Okay. The first three from the organization list, please come on up, are Steve Entler, Ray Miles, and Kadir Waco. And they'll be followed by Brooke Steger, Stephen Kafori, and Kelly Amico.
Come on up.